Good morning. Welcome to ULT in Philadelphia. As is our custom, for those of us at their first visit, we make the process of introducing you to the Declaration of the ULT, a wonderful little pamphlet. And if you do not have one, you may pick up one at the book table. Yes, we have a book table where you can buy literature, or at the usher's table as you go out. Briefly, though, the purpose is to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And therefore, without further ado, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of the Theosophy. Without professing attachment to any theosophical organization, it is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists wherever and however situated is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. This wonderful little pamphlet explains on the inside our meeting hours and subject matter. As you will see, if you pick up one, that it also has other information. There's a part here called Creation or Evolution. Wonderful to read. As you notice, the door is open this morning at 10:30. And we began promptly at 11. We'll be done at noon. The topic for this day, which is March the 4th, the origin and nature of faith. Now on Wednesday, we open at 5:15, and this permits you to go into our library for a couple hours to 7:15 when we close. You will be amazed and certainly drawn to examine that library, which contains the regular theosophical literature plus other references. There's always someone like ourselves present. We're called volunteers. We're using the ocean of theosophy at the present time, so Wednesday night, you come in early enough, you can at least find out what the work will be about that evening. We covered pretty much this little pamphlet, but as I said, if this is your first visit, please pick up one. Stuff it in your pocket. Read it when you have the opportunity. As is our custom, we begin by a few minutes of reading from the Bhagavad Gita this morning. Devotion by means of faith. Those who worship me with the constant zeal, with the highest faith and minds placed on me, are held in high esteem by me. But those who with minds equal toward everything, with senses and organs restrained and rejoicing in the good of all creatures, meditate on the inexhaustible, immovable, highest, incorruptible, difficult to contemplate, invisible, omnipresent, unthinkable, the witness, undemonstrable, shall also come unto me. For those whose hearts are fixed on the unmanifested, the labor is greater, because the path which is not manifest is with difficulty attained by corporeal beings. But for those who worship me, renouncing in me all their actions, regarding me as the supreme goal, and meditating on me alone, if their thoughts are turned to me, O son of Pritha, I presently become the savior from this ocean of incarnations and death. Place then thy heart on me, penetrate me with thy understanding, and thou shalt without doubt hereafter dwell in me. But if thou shouldst be unable at once steadfastly to fix thy heart and mind on me, strive then, O Dhananjaya, to find me by constant practice in devotion. If after constant practice thou art still unable, follow me by actions performed for me. For by doing works for me, thou shalt attain perfection. But if thou art unequal even to this, then being self-restrained, place all thy works, failures, and successes alike on me, abandoning in me the fruit of every action. For knowledge is better than constant practice. Meditation is superior to knowledge. Renunciation of the fruit of action to meditation. Final emancipation immediately results from such renunciation. We beg you to listen further.
Friends, our umbrella theme for the month of March is the mysteries of the mind, and our first subject for consideration is the origin and nature of faith. And we think that if we were to ask people, we know what they think faith means, they'll tell you that they have faith in perhaps a certain person, faith in God, faith in their religion, faith in some authority, usually a conviction that something is worthwhile and true. So there are many different kinds of faith, as many as there are different kinds of people. Theosophy invites us to inquire from a universal perspective in trying to solve this mystery of mind, the origin of, and nature of faith. So we can begin with the suggestion that faith is a power, and it is knowledge that lies within each human being. So right from the start, we'll say that the origin of faith is from within, and it is power, and it is knowledge. We could say it's spiritual knowledge and spiritual power. So each human being, starting from this universal perspective, has this same power, even though, as we said, the object of that faith may differ from person to person. And even when we run into, at times, or that person who says they've lost their faith, or they've lost faith, and maybe even at times we've felt that way, what they're really expressing is an inner conviction that their lack of trust and confidence is valid, because their life experience provided to them has given them ample evidence that there is nothing worthy of their faith and trust. So it's still a faith, it's still a conviction that something is true, but for the time being, there's nothing that proves worthy of that faith. So they say they've lost it, because in general, people define faith as something outside them, some idea or some object they believe in. So this is an important point to realize, that the power and knowledge, the conviction, comes from within. So let's start with what we mean by faith is knowledge, or conviction of the truth of that which upon our faith is fixed. So we'll say it's an inner conviction of knowledge or truth. Now, in Sanskrit, this knowledge, understanding, direct perception of truth is given a name called sattva. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us that the faith in each human being proceeds from the sattva quality, meaning that their faith proceeds from their highest understanding or knowledge of truth, just as a power. And that the embodied soul is gifted with faith. Faith is a spiritual quality inherent in our nature. In that sense, we are gifted with it. It's an inherent genius or talent. Nobody gives it to us, but it is something we inherently own. Now, the object of that faith could be real, it could be unreal. We could have faith in something that's a fantasy or a delusion. We could believe in certain things that are not factual or true. We could believe the earth is flat. We could believe that heaven is above and hell is below. We can believe all sorts of things. We can believe in objects which are transitory and permanent, or permanent. We could have faith in material objects because they seem to last a long time and want to acquire certain things that seem to have enduring value. Or we can have faith in an idea, and that idea could be true or could be false. It could be a universal idea, it could be a very particular relative truth. But the point we're getting here is that to the soul, it is true. And that conviction, regardless of whether the object is real or unreal, whether the idea is false or true, that conviction that something is true has power, has creative power. So we see many things being accomplished because people have faith in something. So we're getting next to this next idea that faith is not only knowledge, but it is power. And it is a power that comes from within. We'll see it's one of the most important powers we have. And we just want to give a little bit of thought about how important faith as a power is to us. Well, faith is powerful because it brings about results. It manifests our hopes and dreams that we envision and desire. Now, we may hope for something, we may imagine it, but it requires faith to help it manifest. So one of the old expressions is faith establishes the will and confirms the imagination. Now, you may be more familiar with the saying in the Bible that when Jesus said, if you had faith the size of a mustard seed and you said to the mountain to move, the mountain would move. And he's only emphasizing there the importance of faith as a power. So that's one way faith is a power. It manifests. Faith is also powerful because no one acts without faith in their ability to do something. Now, you may have gone to school to learn mathematics or maybe learn how to write or just public speak, but if for a moment you lose your faith in your ability to do that, you'll freeze up. You won't be able to say anything. You won't write anything. People speak of writer's block or stage fright, because a person temporarily loses their faith in their ability to do something. No one pursues that which they don't believe and have faith that they can achieve. So if you want to build a home, if you want to learn a subject, if you want to complete some project at work, you can't do that. You can't pursue that unless you have that faith as a power to achieve it. And another way faith is a power, each human being becomes the kind of person they believe they can be. So if you believe you can grow up to be a certain kind of person, or over the next year you can achieve the certain kind of goal, you need faith in order to acquire that. And if your idea, you can have all the faith in the world, but if your idea of who you can be is small, then the result of that faith, you'll only become, to that degree, be able to express the kind of person you want to be. So it is direct knowledge of who we think we are and who we think we can be and become, but it is also the power in ourselves to become that. So you are here, you have developed the way you are today because you believed you could be that kind of person. You could believe you could know more, you could be a better human being, you could find the questions you could looking for. So it is very important that we not take for granted this power of faith. And it is also very important that we closely examine the ideas we have about ourselves, about nature, about the world in which we live, and the objects that we believe in and the ideas we believe in, because these ideas will color and modify the expression of our faith. And so here's where the subject of faith comes right in with the idea of the mystery of the mind. We're talking about the ideas we hold in our mind. Now, let's just take a general example that helps us understand that. Think of the unlimited power of electricity. It's a universal force, and even when we see it manifested in a lightning storm, it overwhelms us. But that lightning is only a momentary flash of a small portion of electricity available to us. Well, that electricity, as vast as it is, can be expressed in any one of the number of different instruments. And those instruments weaken or modify or change the expression of that electric power. Well, faith is like that. Faith is like electricity. It's an immense power, but our ability to manifest it depends upon our instrument, not just our physical body, but more importantly, the ideas we hold in our mind, the ideas we believe in and believe to be true. So this is the distinction then between belief and faith. Some people confuse the two. Faith is the power. It's the electricity. It's the conviction. Belief is like that little instrument, that little engine. It's what the ideas that we have accepted, either out of reason or blind acceptance, we accepted to be true, that become the focus of our faith. And so we wanted to make that distinction. So if faith is essentially power and knowledge that comes from within, then the highest faith is faith in ourselves, based on a true realization of our nature, of ourselves, and the power that comes from that true realization of who and what we are. The highest faith, being knowledge and power that comes from within, is the faith in ourselves, our the true nature of ourselves, and the knowledge and power that can come forth and be expressed from that understanding. Now, according to Krishna, the highest faith, our knowledge of ourselves, is the knowledge and realization that the unmanifested, omnipresent, eternal, and indestructible Supreme Spirit, whatever you want to call it, is one with and inseparable from ourself within. One with and inseparable. And as we've heard him say in the reading, this highest faith is very difficult for human beings to realize, because the personality causes them to believe that their self is separate from the Supreme Spirit. We might say it a little different. It's our personal idea that causes us to think that we are separate from this Supreme, because we identify with that personal idea. Now, we want to think about that a moment. When we say our personal idea, what is it formed from? Well, it's formed from so many variables that it seems impossible for any one human being to have the same personal idea of whom they, what they are. Everybody has a different kind of family, physical condition of health, different property, different strengths and weaknesses, different brothers and sisters with different qualities, different career. And these are just the physical things. When you get into our emotional nature and our attitudes, some are motivated out of fear. Some of us are motivated because we have to do the right thing regardless of what obstacles we have. Some of us are more gentle. Some of us are more adaptable. Some of us charge ahead. The inner variety of tendencies is even greater than the outer expression. So identifying with this, thinking that we are these things, we can understand why we think we are separate or different if we identify with that personal idea from another human being, and why we think we are different from nature, and why we think we are different from the Supreme Spirit. But Krishna gives us a hint where we can find that inner self that is one and identical, not only with the Supreme, but with every other human being. And that is, the self is the witness and the perceiver. So when we have this idea of the personal self, or the personal idea, we believe ourselves to be separate, and from that separateness arises the idea of superstition, prejudice, selfishness, all these things that for individuals and group of individuals lead to problems. We might say that it is our faith, our conviction that we are this limited personal being separate and we have to do certain things to survive. It's our faith that causes us to act in such a way that can either be creative or destructive in the world we live. So Krishna, as we heard in the reading, points out a path, even though it's difficult, by which we can begin to develop this higher kind of faith in ourselves. And as he says, the biggest obstacle will be getting over the personal idea of just thinking about ourselves as separate human beings. And we're going to start, because he does, at the top of the ladder. And it's going to seem kind of far off and difficult. But the top of the ladder can be reached by smaller steps. So by the time we get to the end, we will see that we can each begin this process of finding the highest faith in ourselves as spiritual beings and learning how to express the power, the creative power that comes from that. So the first, or the highest step, he says, that we can aspire to is the ardent turning of the heart and mind to the unmanifested witness. Now, Plato calls this meditation or prayer. In other words, it's turning our mind to the idea that we are the perceiver, the witness of all our experiences, and keeping our heart and mind on that idea throughout the day. Well, any one of us in any one moment can reflect on the idea that we are the perceivers, we are the observers. We know we are the same witness, that we are the same perceiver, observing what's going on today in this room that we were yesterday or we were a few days ago. The experiences change, the sensations change, but we're basically the same witness and observer. So at any moment we can choose to think that way. The challenge is, the highest practice is to constantly be aware in that state. And that state takes practice. And it's difficult because it's unmanifested and it's within, and we're more likely to focus our attention as mind beings on the world around us. That gets our attention. So to constantly stand back and reflect and realize we are the observer takes practice. And it's difficult, but, you know, Mr. Judge says, look, the highest goal is going to take as much effort as the lowest goal. So you might as well choose the highest goal and begin to work towards that. You may fail many times, but at least that's the highest. The second thing we can do, if that seems to be too far out of our reach, is a constant practice of mental devotion to the Supreme Spirit, the Self of all. And that is realizing that this self that we sense in ourselves, the perceiver, the witness, the observer, the power to know, the power to act, is the same in every human being. It's the same in every being, but not all, only human beings are self-consciously aware of that. So when we act, we can, and when we act, whatever we may do, or when we think, we cannot constantly place our mind on the thought that we are not separate. We are one. That this is a true basis of universal brotherhood. Because our senses are constantly presenting us with the idea that we are separate. So we need to use our mind to reflect upon the idea that this one self, this one identity, is inherent in all beings. Just like that electric power moves through all the instruments, it's the same power manifesting through many forms. But if that's still too difficult, then he says, well, you can take up certain practices or rituals. And some people like to make sacrifices, and some will be give to charities, and some will be go on to certain kinds of fasts or regulations and restrictions of their body, or they'll pray, or they'll have certain religious devotions. In other words, they'll use the ritual as an external means of keeping their mind on what they're devoted to. But even in doing that, you're not doing it for your own benefit, you're doing it for the benefit of all. So then he comes down, he says, well, if that's still too difficult, if you're not the kind to make special practices, then everything you do, you go to work, you make breakfast for your family, you drive your car, you help somebody across the street, all the works, all the performances that you try to do, whether they're successful or fail, whether you get praised or blamed, whatever you do, do it as an offering, do it as a benefit for the whole of life, because everything comes from and is a manifestation of that one self. And finally, well, not finally, the next step would be if you can't, in a positive step of devotion, offer everything you can to the Supreme, at least when you're acting, try to get out of your mind the idea that I'm just doing this for myself. I'm just doing this to see what I can get out of it. Abandon the fruit of action. Don't make that your motive all the time. Try to do things with a thought of how they can help others. And he says, well, let's assume you can't even do that. Even that's too hard. Then at least study. Read the books. Study yourself. Get familiar with the ins and outs of your nature, how difficult it is. At least study awareness. And not going around blindly doing things all the time, at least set that first stage of becoming more aware of the problem ahead of you. So we can all begin there. We can all begin to recognize the challenge we have and begin to work our way up. So what is it we have to know? What is it we have to know? What is it we have to believe in order to have this higher faith? And there are basically three things. And we put them forth as ideas for you to consider. And we're going to say that they're self-proving, because each of us has capacity right now to prove them to ourselves. But all we can say is it's going to be up to each individual to increase their faith in those ideas, to realize them more and more. And as they do, the creative power of faith will become more manifested in their life in anything they want to do. And we're not just talking about faith in the religious sense, but faith in the conduct of their everyday life, faith in the ability to become the kind of person they want to be, and so forth. So the first idea is that each one is the self in their most inner nature. That Supreme Spirit is the self in each and all of us in our inner nature. So when we think of the attributes of that Supreme, that it is ancient, constant, eternal, cannot be destroyed, everlasting, permanent, all-knowing, we can find in ourselves that principle, that in I, that sense of identity, I am, that is changeless, constant, eternal, within. It's not something that you can point to without. It's not something you can prove to another person that it exists. You just know that you are an identity, I. And it is, regardless of all the changes of our personality, who we think we are, what we believe, that I is constant. That self is in our innermost nature. And we can convince ourselves and have faith in that idea of I, that it is changeless, constant, and eternal, the more we think about it and apply it. The second thing we have to realize is every power we have, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, comes from that I, comes from that self. Well, we say it. I went to this store. I bought some groceries. I wrote a book. I said hello. It all comes from that essential entity or identity of I expressing itself, every power. So whatever we want to do, we have to realize that all powers come from within. They are not given to us from without. We don't have to depend on some outside source of authority, of power to achieve anything. All the creative power lies within that spiritual principle. And so every human being is conscious of that and can extend the range of perception and action of that I. So we say, I see. Well, I didn't see that before. I struggled with that before, but now I see it. Well, there's a problem I have today that I don't understand, but tomorrow I'll see it. In other words, that power to see or to know of that I is capable of expansion. And the more we have faith in that, the more we have our faith in our ability to learn, to understand anything. There are no mysteries to the self once we increase our faith. And just as all actions come from that I, that power, that range of which we can act also comes from it. I am in the Olympics now, but when I was 5 years old, I couldn't do that. But I practiced and I practiced and I practiced, and now it's the same I that can act in this much more expanded way. Well, that's just one idea. Maybe it's a surgeon, or it's a professor, or it's a parent. The range of expression, of perception and power and action, all comes from that. So if we can recognize that, we can all understand it and think about it and increase our faith in it, that we are one in our nature with the Supreme, that we all actions, all powers come from the self, and the power to act and to know can be extended in, can continuously extend and grow. You know, it's interesting that the Hindus in the Sanskrit, they have a name for that self within that is one with the self of all, and it's called Atman. And it is said to be one with Brahma. Atman and Brahma. The individual self are one. And the Brahma, the root of it, means to grow, to expand. And that self within has that same power. So we finish here, and we welcome your questions and comments and thoughts on this wonderful subject, important subject of the nature and origin of faith. Yes.
Is faith based on blind belief or knowledge or knowing? Because if it's based on blind belief, then it could be based on placebo effect. Mm-hmm. You're following something that you think is true, but it isn't.
So the question is faith based on blind belief or is it based on reason and knowledge? Yes. Does electricity flow through a generator? Or does it flow through a washing machine? Yes. Okay, the power is the faith. Faith in a false idea blindly accepted can still produce results. Limited results. Maybe not the best results. Partial results, maybe selfish results, but it'll still produce results. Faith based on reason will also produce results, different kinds of results, better results, more enduring results. Faith based on knowledge is the best of all because you know how to apply it. So we have three levels by which faith can express itself. Think of these as capacitors in an electrical system, you know, that amplify or resist. You can limit your faith by just blindly accepting. You don't really know. You're just taking what somebody told you to be true. Well, that's the most fragile kind of faith. That's the kind of faith that you lose quickly. You know, it's I lost faith because your faith was just based on shaky ground. And then there's faith based on reason. Well, that's better. But it's still a little shaky because your reason is only good as the solidity of your premises. You can start with a bad premise and have perfect reason and come up with a bad solution. But at least it's better. But knowledge, faith based on direct experience, confirmed wisdom, checked and testified and verified by all human beings who ever investigate the same thing, that's the highest kind of faith. Faith equivalent to wisdom or knowledge or truth. Yes.
I'm curious to what part conditioning plays in understanding faith. Is conditioning the product of faith in Atman, or is conditioning some sort of limitation or amplifier of Atman in faith?
Interesting question. Could you give an example what you mean by conditioning there?
Well, I take into mind. Perhaps you grew up in a society or culture where social norms are different than the social norms they are here, for instance. So you may have faith or not have faith in something working out in a normal process. Like you may say, you know, around here, A plus B plus C is always going to be D, or et cetera, like that, you know. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing, is that the reality of it because of the faith in that? Or is in other words, I'm asking, what came first? Is the conditioning the product of that faith? Mm-hmm. Or is the conditioning the definer of the faith? You know
what I mean? Well, okay. Remember, where are we going to begin? Are we going to begin with particulars or are we going to begin with universals?
Causes, yeah.
Let's begin with the universals because they're the causes, okay? Electricity is, in its most universal sense, is the cause of all the manifestations, particular manifestations of it. The generator, the light bulb, is not the cause of electricity. It's the particular way in which electricity can express itself. So let's begin with the idea that faith is the cause. Now, what conditions the faith, the way we express it. And here's where it connects with the mystery of the mind. What conditions it most are the ideas we have, because our ideas shape the manifestation of our inner knowledge and action. Just think about it. We said the self acts, the self knows. I know, I act. But if I think I am a nurse, that's how I am going to act. If I know and I think I am a parent, that's how I'm going to act. Now, where did I get those ideas that I was a nurse or a parent? Well, I was conditioned, was I not? I was trained either formally in an education process, or maybe I grew up in a family where I was taught that I was the victim of some sin committed by Adam and Eve ages ago, and now I am an inheritor of that sin, and my only salvation is through a particular kind of devotion. That's the idea. That's going to control the expression of my faith. Or maybe there's another idea I was taught with. So even if we were not taught that, we are continuously bombarded by media and advertising and get conditioned about the ideas of how we should think ourselves to be. You know, what's the ideal expression of a human being? What a human being should look like, should think like to be successful. And if we don't have those things, maybe we don't have faith in our ability to be successful. So yes, it is conditioning that shapes our beliefs, shapes the ideas, but they are not the source of their faith. The faith comes from within, but they definitely modify and color the way our faith can be expressed.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, it seems that the journey is for most is to find that divine witness or to recognize that divine witness. How does one go about identifying it? I think maybe knowing that it exists helps. Mm. But how does one go about finding this divine witness?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to, that's the first step of faith. The first thing you want to have faith in is that you are the witness. I am I, the perceiver, the knower. And the reason that has to be the first step, it's the foundation, because all power, all knowledge, all growth comes from that. So that's the critical step. And it's the idea is that it's something within. So the search is within, and we're not necessarily accustomed to or know how to search within our nature. If somebody asks us to find, you know, how to get to a certain store, we know how to find it on a computer or a smartphone or so. But who's telling us how to find the self within? Well, we've been told for ages, but perhaps we've forgotten or nobody's reminded us of how to do it. That's one of the values of the devotional books. So the way we can begin to do it is if we're told that the self within, the perceiver, doesn't change, although everything else changes, is enduring, even though everything else is temporary, maybe this perceiver, this witness, is something within ourselves that doesn't change and is enduring. Well, how do we find that? Well, let's begin with everything we know. Let's begin with our bodies. Have our bodies changed? Have they endured? Well, they definitely changed and they haven't endured as, okay, my body's still here, obviously, but it's not the same body I had when I was a child. That body didn't endure, that's gone. So that can't be the perceiver. Well, how about my desires? You remember Pez? Tootsie Rolls? Did you desire those when you were young? Do you still desire them? No, maybe you do. But maybe you desire other things. Remember when you used to desire a shiny bike? Well, maybe you don't want the bike anymore, but now you desire other things. So our desires change, and they get weaker, and they're stronger, and they get modified by our conditioning. So that can't be the perceiver. Well, how about our ideas? Oh boy, when I was when we were teenagers, we had all sorts of ideas about what our parents knew and what we knew. And do we still think we're so smart, or that they didn't know it all? Or maybe we thought that our parents knew everything. Do we still feel that way? Or maybe we thought our teachers knew everything. Maybe we thought our government knew everything. Do we still feel that way? Or maybe we thought our religion knew everything. Everything was said in the Bible was true. Or everything. Do we still think that? Well, maybe we do in some areas, but we have to acknowledge that our ideas change. Well, that can't be ourselves. Well, how about our virtues? Well, maybe we're idealistic when we were young. Maybe we were fearless. Maybe we were willing to do anything that seemed to be right, even if it cost us dearly, if we hurt us. Well, maybe we won't do that now. Maybe we're not as fearless because I may do the right thing, but if I get hurt, I won't be able to support my family. So I'm not as willing to do that. I'm not as willing to be as courageous. Well, that changes. So yeah, even our virtues can't be ourselves, can't be the self. Well, how about our faults? Oh boy, what we got away with and nobody knew about, getting the idea here? Well, we would never do that again. But the fact that it changed can't be ourselves. So none of these things, all these things are not the self because they don't change. So what are we doing? We're shaving away the layers from outside within until we're only left with the only thing that hasn't changed in our endured. If our body hasn't changed, if our thoughts haven't changed, if our desires haven't changed, if our feelings haven't changed, if our weaknesses, our strengths haven't, the only thing that hasn't changed is the fact that we were aware, we witnessed that we were one way in one time and we're now a different way. So that's how we search, that's how we find our true selves. Now, we went through that long process just like we might practice at scale. But you do it whenever you need to, and at some point it becomes a skill. You just assume it. You just know it. And whenever you want to, you can take the stance of the observer, the perceiver. And that gives you great power and control. Because once you realize that you are not the changing experience and you don't identify with it, the power of the self to act the way it wants to, and not according to the conditioning provided, expands. You are no longer the victim in the chains of the conditioning of who and what you think you are, but now you are the master, your own inner master of yourself, expressing what you want to be, the highest ideal you want to achieve. Yes.
Well, years and years ago, the term apprenticeship was a common term used. And a young man says, I want to be able to do what you're doing. And he would be apprenticed to someone skilled in doing that. We think the word, I can do, still requires knowledge of what it takes in order to be able to do it with face.
Yes, so now any skill requires knowledge, but it also requires faith in ourselves to learn that knowledge, to acquire that skill. We still have to believe in our ability that if we study and apply our faculties of mind, which we're going to be talking about this month, that we can eventually know what we need to know. There was a hand. Did you still?
Well, just the. So is consciousness this divine witness?
Well, we said that when we look within, one of the things we realized that every being is conscious. Every every being is conscious. Well, how do we know we're conscious? We're aware. Well, what is it in ourselves that is aware? It is the awareness is inherent in that self. Just like wetness is inherent in water. Consciousness is inherent in the self. When you realize the self, you realize that it is yourself that is aware and perceives everything around you. It perceives what is coming to you through the senses. It perceives what you're feeling on your body. It perceives what you're hearing. So the self and consciousness are one and the same. But there's that trinity. There's the self, there's the awareness, and there's the power. The three in one, the trinity. Where there's consciousness, there's the self. Where there's consciousness, there's the power to act on that awareness. So you cannot have one without the other. Yes?
Since faith is fundamentally different from knowledge, how does one deal with a situation when one has faith in something that's generally considered as impossible?
Faith in something that is generally considered impossible. Well, well, faith is conviction that the impossible is possible. Now, if we have, isn't that what Jesus said? If you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you said the mountain move, it'll move. Well, how many people would think moving a mountain is possible? Was he joking? Was he kidding with us? Was he being sarcastic? When he said that something as impossible as moving a mountain could be done if we have faith? So faith added to knowledge, faith added to knowledge of the laws of nature makes the impossible possible. Because this is not a universe of chaos. The reason things happen is according to law. The reason things are possible or impossible is according to laws. The more we understand those laws and have faith in them, the more we can accomplish much more than we can now. In the back, yes.
And that idea of consciousness, even when this physical body is asleep, and we go into this state of dreams, well, there's consciousness there. And beyond that, if we had the knowledge to know how to bring that consciousness from the beyond the dreaming state back to the waking state.
Yes, very good point. We didn't even get into the different states of consciousness that convince us that that I in us is immortal, that doesn't depend on the body. But just think of the dreaming state. Who is the dreamer? Who is the witness of the dream? Well, when we wake up in the morning and we say to somebody, I had the funniest dream last night, or I had the scariest dream. What we mean is that we were there as the witness of that dream. And it seemed funny because things happened that shouldn't happen, or it's scary because things happened that frightened us, but we witnessed with our senses and our thoughts and our feelings and reacted, and now we bring back that memory, the same I, reporting it in a waking state. So, but it's still that same self. And what happens with that power? How many inventions, how many works of art, how many works of literature do we have today? Because a perceiver in a dream, the self in a dream, was able to carry that knowledge onto this waking plane and express it through that self as a power, a creative power, and create the washing machine, create the sewing machine, create the beautiful piece of music based on what they experienced in another state. So we're just beginning to address the mysteries of the mind, and we hoped we've made a few things clearer today. So next week, we are speaking of the inner genius. The inner genius, next Sunday. And coming up this Wednesday, appropriately, we are looking at beginning our study of the after-death states, the separation of principles. Our meeting's adjourned.